Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast of the First Christian Church of Pittsfield. The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday school offered for all ages at 9:15. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.
We're going to be speaking out of Matthew 8 today, and you've heard the passage before, but I want you to hear it again just because it's so critical to what we're going to be getting into. Matthew 8:18. Now Jesus saw a crowd around him and gave orders to depart to the other side of the sea. And then a scribe came to him and said, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "The foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." Another of the disciples said to him, "Lord, permit me to first go and bury my father." But Jesus said to him, "Follow me and allow the dead to bury their own dead." Some difficult things Jesus says there. But, you know, when we've lived with somebody a long time, we learn to hear the patterns in their minds. And when they say something, a lot of times we get ahead of them. And over the last few years of her life, I learned to hear something from my wife, Bev. Many of you have met Bev over the years. But there was something she said that I didn't understand at first. But I finally learned, if we were sitting quietly in the living room, and she said, "You know, I've been thinking. I know the next question I needed to ask was, what's this going to cost me?" Because if she knew what she wanted and wasn't going to cost me anything, she'd just do it. And when she said, "I've been thinking," I knew I was going to be voluntold and wound up in the middle of something I hadn't really planned for. And there's always a cost. There's always a cost to things. Sometimes we mind those costs and sometimes we don't. But life has its price on everything. And I want to talk to you about the cost of discipleship. Now, discipleship is a word that gets thrown around a lot. But what does it really mean to be a disciple of Jesus Christ? To take on the role. Remember when he called people to follow him, they were his disciples. And it's a little hard to follow in our culture because we don't really have that kind of equivalent, an equivalent of that. Now, you get out of high school and you say, "Now what am I going to do?" You almost always wind up choosing a school and going to that school, and they sign you up and they tell you how many hours you have to take, and so much of it has to be in this and so much of it in that, and if you do all these hours they'll give you a diploma, and you get to go out into the world with a diploma, and if that impresses anybody you get a job, and if it doesn't, McDonald's is always there. But in the ancient world there was nothing like that. Although there were great centers of learning, like in Athens or Alexandria, there were no schools in the way we think of a school. What you did, if you wanted to become a philosopher, you went to Athens and you found a philosopher whose philosophy seemed to be the one you wanted to connect with, and you became his disciple. There wasn't a class, there wasn't a structure. You simply said and worked out a deal with him. He usually got paid for it too. But then you just started to hang out with him. If he got up at 8 o'clock in the morning, you met him at 8 o'clock in the morning. You watched him eat breakfast. You walked around and he taught you and told you what was going on and showed you how he lived and tried to fill you in with the knowledge and the way of thinking he had. And over the years, you became more and more like the one you were following. You were his disciple so that he could pour into you to an extent that you then could take the philosophy, the teaching that was his, and live it out in your own life as well. But in this passage, Jesus is dealing with two men who have come to him volunteering to be his disciples, people who want to be followers, who want to get attached to Jesus and the teaching he's putting out there, the life he's living, the power he has in dealing with people. They want that. And Jesus does an odd thing. You know, it's kind of strange. Somebody comes to visit the church, we all say, "Yay, you're here." And somebody came to Jesus and said, "I want to be your follower. In fact, I'll go wherever you go." And he kind of throws cold water on him. He says, "Well, think about the cost." He doesn't just welcome them, he confronts them with the cost of discipleship. The first one he talks to is the scribe, or the teacher of the law, and he was a respected part of the community. Not quite a priest, but someone who knew the Old Testament scriptures backwards and forwards and knew the commentaries and the teaching on them and was able to make wise commentary and teaching, all that. And this guy comes and volunteers to be a disciple. And we know some things about this guy just because there were traditions and conditions to be a scribe or a teacher of the law. He was probably a fairly wealthy man. You couldn't become a scribe or a teacher of the law in your spare time. You had to have enough wealth behind you to be able to just devote full time to being a scribe. And nobody paid you for that. You had to come with your own money to the table. So he probably had grown up with some wealth, had some of his own acquired wealth, and because it was expected of a teacher, he almost undoubtedly would have been married. Don't know how old he was, but good chance he had children at home. And Jesus says, basically, stop and think about what you're saying here. The foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. You know, this isn't like going to an Ivy League school where you're going to get a nice dorm room and be served good meals and everything's going to be structured and set up for you and you can move from a house where you're fairly well-to-do into a school where you have the privileges of wealth as well. Said, you know, you can follow me. I don't even know where I'm sleeping tonight. I'm not sure where I'm going to get supper tonight, much less tomorrow. In all that comfort, all that routine you're used to, you want to follow me? You're going to have to let that go. You're going to have to become totally dependent on my leadership, on the goodness of other people feeding and housing you, and dependent on me for direction. Where are we going next? We're going to go over to this village, teach, preach, and heal, and cast out demons, and all those things. It says, you know, it's going to be that kind of a life. Think about, before you volunteer to come and be my disciple, are you really ready to pay that kind of a price for the privilege of following me? Just think about it. And we don't know what he did. It's kind of an interesting open-ended story where we know the setup, but not the answer. The second man comes to him and just says, obviously he wants to be a disciple. He's already says he is a disciple, meaning he's at least at some level following Jesus, but he wants to get serious about it. But then he says, but I need to bury my dad. So, you know, give me some time here, I'll be back, but I want to be your disciple. And this one seems particularly harsh, where Jesus, instead of saying, well, of course you need to bury your dad, says, no, don't do that. Follow me, let the dead bury their own dead. Now, what kind of an answer is that? Especially Jesus comes from that Jewish tradition that has one of those, the Big Ten. Yeah, Ten Commandments. What's one of the Ten Commandments? Honor your father and mother. And now he seems to be saying, yeah, except now, not don't. And it must have been a very confusing thing. Now, there's two common understandings of what this passage really is about. They both come to the same place, but just trying to make sense of it. One group of scholars think the man isn't asking permission to go to his father's funeral, but permission to go home and take care of his father till he dies. Let me go bury him. Then once we've taken care of that, I really want to be your disciple. And Jesus says, you know, we think people ought to take care of their parents. We want family to be a priority. But in the kingdom of God, the kingdom of God is an even bigger priority. And if taking care of your dad is keeping you from being part of the kingdom of God and being my disciple, you're not ready to pay the price to be a disciple of Jesus. Now, another group says that Jesus actually was asking the man not to go to his father's funeral. We don't know which of those is true, but it's either way, it's pretty harsh. But by not going to his father's funeral, he may well have been bypassing his inheritance. Think about that. You got to go home. You got to sit while all the neighbors and family come by and mourn with you and go through the process, the burial and all that. And a family member, even a close family member, who didn't even bother to honor his own father by showing up at the funeral, could well have been disenfranchised from his inheritance. And, well, that'd be quite a request from Jesus, too. I mean, you really want to know where the fault lines in your family are? Divide an inheritance. You'll find out. Yeah, it's not pretty most of the time. And Jesus says, no, just walk away from that and come follow me. Now, which is it? We don't know. But either way, the point's clear. Jesus says, if you want to follow me, you've got to make me the number one priority over everything else. Your comfort, the people you love and are committed to, the whole nine yards, God takes precedence, or you're not ready for the kingdom. And that's pretty stunning. Pretty hard for us to hear. You know what? What do you treasure most in life? Remember the rich young ruler came to Jesus, said, you know, I've done all the stuff I'm supposed to do. I've been religious. I've kept the laws. I've made the sacrifices. What am I still missing? And Jesus says, oh, I got a plan for you. Just go sell everything you own, give it away, and then come follow me. And it says he went away sad because he had great wealth. Yeah. And I don't think Jesus meant that for everybody to go cash in your retirement accounts and follow him. But he's saying if that's what's in the way, it's got to go. It's part of the kingdom priority that whatever else in your life is messing between you and God, you got to let go. And that's really what's happening. And Jesus isn't just trying to be ugly to these people. You know, at first glance, it looks like he's just having a bad day. And people get away from me. But no, he's in the goodness and love of his heart. He's trying to say, don't make this commitment unless you're ready to stick to it, to follow me in the good times and the bad, and to truly be my disciple, someone who follows. Face the fact there's a price. And this isn't too complicated, really. You know, in every part of life, if you want to make some changes, there's a price to be paid. You walk down the street and go to the new car lot in the morning and say, hey, I'm looking for, and you describe the car you want and the color you like and the features you think you'd like to have. And some smiling salesman will be glad to oblige you, help you find that car, and, you know, take it for a test drive and show you how all the nifty little bells and whistles work that you didn't have in your old car and try to make you hungry for the new one and what it can do. And then you say, I like this car, and he gives you the key and you drive home, right? Well, it doesn't quite work that way, does it? You say, I like this car. He says, well, great. For only $30,000, you can have it. And you say, oh, good grief. And then you stop and count the cost. And I'm going to be putting in $500 a month for the next 5 years, and I don't know what my job is going to do over the next 4 years and 3 years and 2 years. And you got to make a really tough call. It's not just, do I like that car? It's, am I willing to pay the price to be the owner of that car? And I don't care about what car you buy. Sometimes it's right to buy the new car, sometimes it's not, and all of that, that's not the point. The point is, you don't buy a car till you've sat down and counted the cost and figured out, am I really willing to give up that much of my income so that I can go into that nice shiny car that smells like a new car and all that for the next 5 years after it doesn't look like and smell like a new car anymore in the whole nine yards? What do I have to give up to get a good thing in my life? What good things do I have to give up? And it becomes a matter of deciding what really matters. We're going to look at just for a second at, in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 14. Let's see, starting up at which one? I got the wrong place. I'm good at that. 28. Yeah. Oh yeah. Go back to 27. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Oh. Whoever doesn't willingly pick up that which is going to cost you everything and follow me can't really be a serious disciple. For which one of you, when he sits down to build a tower, doesn't first sit down and calculate the cost, see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he's laid a foundation and isn't able to finish, all who observe it will begin to ridicule him, saying, this man began to build but wasn't able to finish. Or what king, when he sets out to meet another king in battle, will not first sit down and consider whether he's strong enough with 10,000 men to encounter the one coming against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other's still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace. Says, you know, you understand, before you make a big decision, you count the cost. You decide, can I pay the price to see this through? Am I willing, even if I can, am I willing to pay the price to see this through? And when Jesus challenges these two would-be disciples, he's not trying to be mean to them, he's not upset with them, he's just trying to ask them to honestly decide what they value most in life, and to make a choice that they're going to be able to live with and follow through on for the long term. Now, you know, all through the New Testament, Jesus and after his death and resurrection, the early church and the apostles called everyone to be a disciple of Jesus. Now, sometimes we get the focus wrong in our culture, and we get busy trying to make everybody a believer. And that's a great start. You can't be a disciple if you don't get to be a believer first. But Jesus didn't say, go into all the world and make believers. He said, make disciples. And as a church, as God's children, we're not fully doing the job until we've moved beyond just making believers to the business of being and then making disciples. And of course, you can't make a disciple if you're not one yourself. You can't give away what you don't have. So it begins with us becoming followers of Jesus who pay the price and are willing to become his disciples that others might become his disciples. See, think about it this way. God offers you everything deeply, everything your heart ever desired. Now, he doesn't offer you a pink Cadillac or a great big pickup. That, you know, not those kind of desires, but the deep desires. The things you really, really want in life and that you hunger for and have missed when you didn't have them. He offers all of those to you. He offers peace. But wouldn't you love just to live with an inner peace that actually confuses the people around you, saying, what are you on that you're able to be at peace in the midst of this crazy world and all its stuff? He offers that. He offers you the ability to know God. He offers you a secure home in heaven where you can not just hope, but know that you have a place in His kingdom, in His family, that can't be taken from you forever. He makes so many promises, and His promises, Book of Hebrews says, are always yes. It's not yes and no. In Him, it's always yes. But there's a cost. And it's not a cost in the sense of paying up front to deserve what He freely offers. It's a crazy business. What Jesus Christ offers you is absolutely, totally, unconditionally free. And it costs everything. I try to digest that for a minute. It seems so contradictory. But honestly, the things your heart most craves are freely available to you, but there's a cost, not in the sense that you got to do stuff to deserve it, to earn it, to position yourself before God. He already loves you. He's already put His Spirit in your heart if you're a Christian. All those things are already yours. Our problem is we've got so much junk in the way that keeps us from ever actually unwrapping those gifts that are already there, that are already ours. Think of it, I said earlier, that He wants to give you peace in your heart. He really does want that. In fact, it's one of the fruits of the Spirit. And Jesus Himself said He gives a peace that passes understanding to His people. Well, I've been a pastor a lot of years, and I can tell you there's a lot of us running around who still don't have very much of that peace in our hearts. But you know what? You can have it. Here's a little secret. You can leave this room this morning with your heart at peace before God. With all those things that keep you awake in the night, that churn in your gut, that just take away the ability to just rest before God. Today you can have that. Right here, right now. And it's free. But you'll never get it until you get some junk out of the way. There's the catch. You freely receive it, but to really receive the peace of God, you got to let go of control of your life. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, no. We're Americans. We want control. We want to vote. We want to have a say in the whole thing. And Jesus says you can have that, but you won't get the peace because you'll be trying to run things that only I can run. See, Jesus knows who you are, who you were made to be, where your life can go, and as long as you've got to be in control, you're going to be all torn up because you're going to be working at cross purposes with Him. But when you reach that point where you truly, from the heart, from the bottom of your heart, say, Lord, You're Lord. That's it. I'm not going to be in control. I'm not going to come and tell you what needs to happen. I'm going to come to you for instructions with the intent of obedience. Suddenly, those things that rip the peace from your heart will be resolved. It's an amazing thing. Most of us think we're going to lose something if we give up control. And the truth is, if you give up control to Christ, suddenly you'll gain the peace of God that passes understanding at a level you could never make happen yourself. You know, all of us want to have people around us whom we love and who love us. Everybody wants that. You know, different ways we express that and all that, but that's something everybody wants. Well, Jesus says, as far as it depends on you, you can't make other people get along with you, but you can be at peace knowing you're right with everyone who's willing to be right with you, and you've done what it takes to be right, even with those who won't follow through on it themselves, and you can simply rest in the fact that the people around you love you, and that you love them, and it's all okay. You know, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing to have? Well, you can have it. And again, you can have it before you leave the building this morning. You just have to let go of some things that are keeping you from receiving that present. Here we go. Now he's going to start preaching and stop preaching and go to meddling. But that comes from, like, forgiving other people, whether they deserve your forgiveness or not, whether they want your forgiveness or not. If you will simply make the decision, Jesus Christ has forgiven me more offense than anyone on earth can or will ever do to me, and in light of that, I'm going to forgive everybody, everything. I'm going to let go of my need to see revenge, my need to see that they get theirs, my need to, all those things we have in us where we feel like we've got to bring justice about. What does God say? Justice is, or vengeance is mine. I'll repay. There will be justice in the end. And you don't have to make it happen. And oh, what a burden goes away when you let go of that. You want to get free? Think of the person who you most wish would take it on the chin from God and forgive him. And you win. You win, not them. You get free. You can have freedom in your relationships by letting go of unforgiveness, by letting go of the need to judge everybody and the need to be in charge of their lives. You know, a lot of people have no peace in their life at all because they look around them and see how to fix everybody else, and they just can't wait to get out their toolkit and go after them and make them right. Let go of that. If you can help somebody, by all means, do it. It's good. But let go of the idea that you've got to fix everybody. You don't. That's the Holy Spirit's job. Now, if he can use you in that process, take it and be glad and, you know, get your little toolbox out and set the crescent wrench right and fix them. But if they don't want to be fixed, don't let that eat you up. You be a man or woman of God and let God deal with them. Yeah, but what if he doesn't do what I think he ought to do? Well, you know, he just might be smarter than you, and it's just possible he can make it come out right anyway. And you become a person who's capable of right relationships with people who you didn't think you could ever be right with. Now, you want confidence in your salvation. Your home in heaven is absolutely secure if you'll let go of saying, but first I've got to prove myself. You know, if you have a child who's wandered off and gone the wrong way and you haven't heard from him in a long, long time, and when you have, it's been pretty painful. And one Thanksgiving, the family's gathered for dinner and that prodigal child shows up and says, I'm ready to come home. I'm ready to be part of the family again. But before I do that, let me go mow the lawn. Let me go wash your car. And let me do all this stuff to show you that I deserve to be in the family again. What are you? You're going to say, this is weird. No. If he comes back and he's ready to be in the family, you're going to say, welcome. We've been praying for this day for all these years. And now it's come to pass. Well, if you can pull that off, what does God think when you came to him and said, Lord, I want a place back in the family? You didn't have to earn it. In fact, you can't earn it. Figure it out. You don't have anything God needs. Ever think about that? He lived for all eternity before you came around, and he didn't create you because he needed something. You know, it's funny how we think that somehow we're doing something for God that he couldn't have pulled off for himself. No, it's just in his nature to love us and redeem us. You know, it always strikes me funny when we take offerings in the church. How many people think Sunday morning God gets up out of bed and puts his God pants on and reaches in the pocket and says, oh shoot, I'm out of cash. I really hope those people give good today because I got to get through another day and I couldn't pay for lunch. It doesn't work that way, does it? We understand, but it's not just the cash. It's everything. You don't have anything God needs. It's just his nature to love and welcome and forgive and bring you in anyway. That's totally different. And if you believe that, then you don't have to have any uncertainty about your heavenly home. You know the sacrifice of Jesus Christ is big enough to forgive the worst sinner. And most of you aren't that great of sinners anyway. But even if you are, he's big enough to forgive you. You have a home in heaven if you're in Christ. And if you'll let go of that need to impress God, that need to prove yourself before him, you can rest in total peace about your eternal destiny. And that'll change everything in your life because you'll know where it's all going.
The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. Every Sunday morning there is Sunday school offered for all ages at 9:15. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.